That wool song. At 7:30 in the morning, when John is drinking a cup of tea alone in the kitchen, a football magazine on the table in front of him, he picks up a call from Linda. He hears a small voice at the other end of the line.
Hi, Uncle John. This is Mike speaking. I'm using Mummy's phone.
Okay, Mike. How are you? John asks, setting down his tea.
I'm fine. Is Sherlock Holmes there?
Yes, he is. I'll go and give him the phone. John walks to the bedroom and shakes Sherlock's shoulder. His eyes open and he inhales sharply. He'd been dreaming.
Okay, he's on his way to the phone.
So, well, how's your mum doing? Is someone there?
She's sleeping. Grandad's coming to pick me up for school.
Okay, when she wakes up, tell her I said hi. John taps Sherlock's arm again and nods. So, here he is. I'm giving him the phone. John covers the receiver. Linda's son wants to talk to you. Sherlock furrows his eyebrows.
This is Sherlock Holmes, he says.
This is Mike Barrows speaking. Do you remember me?
Squeaks Mike, though he's trying to sound as serious as he possibly can.
Yes, I remember you.
Me and my friend need your help, sir.
And how can I help your friend and you?
At my school there's an icky man.
Sherlock glances at John, who is standing in the bedroom doorway with his arms folded over his chest.
I see. What kind?
In the girls' loo.
Did you see him too?
Laura did. That's my friend. And she said there was a man looking on when they were in the loo, and she only goes in the boys now, and I guard,
Mike answers.
Did she know that man? Sherlock asks.
No.
When did that happen?
Yesterday and the day before. Can you find him and tell him to shove off?
Yes, I can try. Does your teacher know about him?
I don't know.
Does your mum?
No. So will you come?
Yes, I want to talk to your mum. Ask her to the phone.
She's asleep.
Wake her up for me, please.
Okay. Mummy! So she's coming. Here she is. Here, Mummy, it's Sherlock Holmes. Bye. Thank you.
Linda clears her throat and yawns, whispering something to Mike before picking up.
Hi, Sherlock, she says.
Hey, sorry about this. Everything okay?
Text me the address of your son's school. I'll be there in an hour and a half, Sherlock replies.
What? Why?
Too early to say.
Sherlock has picked up his own phone and is already tapping at it quickly with his thumb.
Is everything okay? What's going on?
I plan to determine that.
Call when you're there and we'll meet up, okay? You're scaring me.
It's not what you're thinking. Unrelated, he says absently, squinting at his screen.
Okay, she says. So, call. I'll be waiting.
John is still watching Sherlock, biting his lip.
What's on? He asks once Sherlock has rung off. What's with the school, Sherlock? Is it them again? Not the you brothers, if that's what you mean, no. Michael is taking things into his own hands. Could be a misunderstanding, but...
Sherlock rolls out of bed, tapping and scrolling. He sniffs.
What sort of misunderstanding? Hey, now. Coming? There's a train every 12 minutes out of Waterloo at this hour.
Yeah, by the way, I want my cig. Give it back. John starts to dress. Sherlock frowns down at the screen again and shakes his head.
Another time.
Linda's text with the school address arrives. After several more minutes of skimming, Sherlock drops the phone on the bed and rushes into the bathroom. He emerges superficially washed, with his hair combed back. He starts digging through one of his drawers. He pulls out a pair of wire-rimmed glasses and shoves them onto his forehead.
Lend me something, he says to John. It can be that.
He gestures toward one of John's button-front jumpers, which is folded on a chair in the corner of the room.
Sure.
John says, as Sherlock slips into pants, dark jeans, and a powder blue shirt. He chooses a red, crested polyester tie, tying it in what John had called a Shelby the Pratt in school. He is now humming a song from Dirty Dancing as he shifts the knot at his long throat. John snickers as he buttons up a shirt.
What are you singing? No idea. It was playing when we were shopping recently, and I can't seem to delete it when I see woolens. Ugh.
Sherlock grunts as he clips a pin closed across the tie and drops the glasses down onto his nose.
Yeah, horrid on the whole, innit? Good, though, for our purposes? he says to his mirror, testing out a mild voice completely unlike his own. He hitches up his jeans and shakes his wrist like his watch irritates his skin. He coughs, sniffing as though he had chronic allergies and a post-nasal drip. John shakes his head. Thomas Barker would basically look like that.
Ready? Sherlock asks in his usual voice, observing John's reaction out of the corner of his eye. I have a biology lesson at 10, unless it happens that I got the date and place all wrong, in which case I will need to wander aimlessly about in my confusion.
The corners of his lips twitch as he turns to get John's cardigan. John sighs and rubs his stomach.
Finish breakfast later, Sherlock says preemptively. Ah, one of your coats. The older brown one.
So, what's on in Egham?
Come, John.
By 11 in the morning, a registered sex offender with a history of child molestation, hired at the primary school under a false name to do general maintenance, is in custody for questioning by the local police. Footage of the man entering the girls' toilets for plumbing work during breaks has been procured, and a sergeant is taking notes of Sherlock's statement on links to the same suspect. It is all John can do to keep his hands to himself. Proud doesn't cover it. On the way to Linda's place, where they have been invited for brunch, Sherlock explains.
Sunningdale, 3 weeks ago, a man dressed as a plumber forced himself on a 13-year-old girl. She broke away and he ran off, no clear image of the attacker. Bracknell, 11 days ago, a man dressed in the clothing of a groundskeeper was chased away from a toilet in a public park after looking in on a woman. Descriptions of height and build agree. Egham, on the same line, as you well know. Michael mentioned the girl's toilet and a man looking in. It fit. And, telling a teacher wouldn't necessarily have helped prevent another incident if the perpetrator was on site doing legitimate work. He'd bide his time and try again. It would be easy to claim it was a mix-up, like I did when I came to see you in hospital. A security guard asked why I'd been in a patient's room. Staying there in the doorway, doing me job, sir, sorry. And today, as a biology sub, wandering through the halls, poking about where I pleased. Ridiculous. A molester's playground. Cut off his prick, piece of shit. John is crossly mumbling and tapping at the pockets of his coat. Thanks for listening, taking him seriously. Can't believe the guy was hanging around in a primary school toilet. Sodding pervert. If he'd gone and touched one, Jesus. Well, there shouldn't be a public award for Michael. It could make him a target. I'll talk to Linda.
Mike is allowed to come home early from school, and Sherlock takes him aside for a long chat concerning the typology of bad strangers over heavily sweetened tea.
We have something in common, you know. Uncle John said you always want heaps of sugar in your tea, just like me.
Which gradually turns into a discussion about how to become an invisible flying spy for the Met in London, Mike's current dream job. John sits with Linda in her kitchen.
He's so brave, you know, just like our Jim, Linda says, her eyes red.
She pulls at her fringe nervously.
I wish he'd told his teacher first. He doesn't really know how to trust now, that's what I think. Maybe it's my fault. I didn't know anything.
Nah, he just wanted to get it taken care of fast and help his friend. And it ended with an arrest. You heard, a recidivist pervert should be shot through.
Take it easy, sweetheart, you're giving yourself a headache, Linda tells him. Have another sandwich.
Lestrade rings Sherlock later to congratulate and thank him. Linda had called and told him all about the incident. From the sound of it, they'd had an encouraging chat, as Sherlock phrases it to John. Lestrade is wound up and spontaneously invites them out for a late drink. John is surprised when Sherlock agrees to go along without dissent, even suggesting a particular club as a destination. Later, he listens carefully to all of Lestrade's ramblings about Linda and her courageous boy without rolling his eyes even once. His gaze is fixed on the dance floor, however. All at once, he announces his intentions.
You're gonna what?
Lestrade exclaims, and stands up from the table.
You're killing us, John laughs and looks up at Sherlock. We can't even dance.
All too easy, Sherlock retorts, removing his jacket.
Nah, it sure well isn't, Lestrade mumbles.
No, I meant killing you both. I've often said so. You might join me, Sherlock says, sipping ostentatiously at John's wine glass and shrugging.
To John he says, Oh, and I think I have finally placed that wool song from earlier. wool song from earlier? Yeah, sure, John shakes his head and shifts in his seat.
Lestrade, Sherlock says to the DI, as they look at the people dancing across the room. Choose someone for me.
John has just clapped his hand over his forehead, and Greg looks over at him, startled.
Well, if you... Okay, the one in the green dress, there, the blonde with the red shoes. Or maybe the ginger with the sort of checked trousers, Lestrade says, chuckling.
Okay, Sherlock says, and leaves, a small smile tugging at his lips.
Ha, he's a hell of a dancer, Lestrade remarks after several minutes. He's already chatted up the blonde. Look at them. How does he just go up like that?
Cocky, will you look at that?
John sighs. Devil. Phoenix. Gorgeous creature, you're killing me on purpose. Beautiful thing. He is snapped out of his thoughts by a long grumble from Greg.
Ah, oh, jeez.
Lestrade pulls out his phone.
Yeah, he mutters into the receiver.
Now? Oh, come on. Almost midnight for crying out loud.
Still?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, be there, yeah.
What's on, Greg? John asks.
Bollocks.
Nah, no, not work. My sister. My mum's not eating again. Dehydrated. Look, I'm gonna need to clear out. You good?
Greg stands to go and pulls out his wallet.
Yeah, yeah. No, I've got these. No, go on.
Thanks, John.
Take it easy.
Hey, call Linda, geriatric nurse. She deals with that all the time.
This hour, though?
Nah.
Works nights. Go on.
Ah, okay. Take care then, thanks.
As Lestrade leaves the club, Sherlock excuses himself from his dance partner and approaches John at the table.
His mother's worse going by his stoop, he remarks.
Needed to go home, yeah, John explains, gesturing at the door.
Regret I can't dance watching you.
Cumulative evidence to the contrary includes your sense of rhythm. And excellent,
don't have it in me.
Sherlock glances down at his watch.
I liked that recent story of yours.
Which one? John asks.
La danse est un duo, fait d'instinct et d'imagination. Regardez-moi.
Sherlock takes one more long sip of wine from John's glass and walks away. John is still gaping at him with concentration. A dance, a duo between the instinct and the imagination. Regard me. Regard? No, watch me. John has a flash of intuition, in the form of adrenaline to his stomach, as to what is about to happen.
My neighbour in Montmartre.
Oh God, yes, do it.
Sherlock has rejoined the red-shoed blonde. She smiles and he puts an arm on her shoulder. He seems to be pointing out a man to her. She puts her hand to her lips. In a moment, the man had introduced himself. Sherlock looks on for a moment before turning away, and suddenly he has started dancing again. Alone, in the middle of a dozen or so couples, John realizes that his phoenix is looking at him across the room, dancing for him. Not just a story. John grips his chair until his knuckles are white, admiring him, pleased all over that this is his dearest friend, his lover, and the bloody sexiest creature in London. Sherlock finally turns away after two songs. Two? Who's able to count now? When an elderly lady approaches him and shouts something into his ear. He grimaces a bit and politely takes a turn with her, in a style resembling a fast ballroom number, much to her delight. John notices that several other ladies at a nearby table are noisily egging her on. He decides she must have won a bet of some kind. God, look at him. I love him. Once John has finished his wine, Sherlock returns to the table and stands in front of him, flushed, with his hands behind his back. He watches expectantly as John pays a waitress who has just stopped to gather glasses from the tabletop. He opens his mouth once she is gone and says quietly,
"Maybe you didn't care for it."
"You're so talented, love."
"Thank you."
"Yeah, baise-moi."
"Essential French."
Sherlock quirks an eyebrow. "Some stuff from the army." John's ears are suddenly pink. He is gazing at Sherlock's lips.
"Order a cab?"
"I already have."
Sherlock leans down and plucks his jacket from the chair next to John. He pushes his hair off his face and they make their way toward the door. Sherlock checks his watch again as he goes. John follows him out into the slick, misty night, where Sherlock is scanning all the numbers of the cabs. they hop into the one that he finally nods toward. Sherlock sits forward to confirm the address with the cabbie, and once he slides the window shut and settles back in his seat, John catches his cheek in his hand.
"You were stunning," he whispers. "I want to kiss you to pieces, right now."
"3," answers Sherlock quietly. "It's 12:02.
John knits his eyebrows and then licks his lips. "Ah, it's late, right, 3 kisses." Sherlock makes a noise of protest. John's first kiss is well placed. To the ear, a bit of tongue warm and breathy. Sherlock shivers and smiles. The second, a bit later, is longer, with Sherlock's scarf pulled aside an inch or so. It is also wordless, pressed to the jugular. The third will come just before the car stops at Baker Street, when Sherlock's nerves are pulled tightest. A small kiss to the cheekbone. "Oh, you meant 3 months. The most amazing I've ever had. And here I am, holding back, you beautiful creature. My dearest friend in the world."
John smiles and looks away as Sherlock nearly drops his house keys on the front steps, trying to work open the wet lock.